Hello, friends. You are listening to 101.9 FM CITR Community Radio, broadcasting live from UBC's Point Grey campus, situated on the traditional, ancestral, and unceded territories of the Musqueam people. At CITR, we endeavor to create and uplift local alternative arts and culture, and we are forever grateful for the privilege to do so on this land. This is Amateur Hour. Thank you for joining us. On Amateur Hour, we sit down with local amateur and student musicians to talk about the music they make and the music they love. My name is Ewan, and in the studio with me today is Connor Joy from the band Sours. yeah, say hello. Tell us a little bit about Sours, this band of yours.
So Sours is it's a little project of mine. I've been running this band for, it used to be under a different name. Been running it for around 2 years, and I've gained a couple friends along the way. You know, members come and go, and then, yeah, it's basically just a passion project of mine, just making music with a bunch of homies.
Yeah, well, we are going to listen to one of Connor's songs here. The first one I have on the list here is Cheap Perfume. What can you tell us about this before we jump right in?
This one was the first song I ever wrote. This was back when I was still in high school, grade 10 or 11. And it actually took me maybe 4 years to finish producing and mixing because I was kind of learning everything at once. And yeah, this is the very first track I ever started writing and finished writing.
All right, great. Well, friends, we are going to listen to Cheap Perfume by Sours, and we'll be right back after this wonderful song. Take a listen.
Thank you.
we are back. You just heard Cheap Perfume by Sours. This is Amateur Hour on 101.9 FM CITR Community Radio. I'm Ewan. In the studio with me today, I have Connor Joy from the band Sours. That was a wonderful song.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing it. Yeah. In the break, we were kind of talking about how you were moving towards a different kind of sound, mm-hmm. and that hearing this stuff again is kind of almost like a time capsule. I just want to talk about that. Like, what is this kind of new direction you're moving in?
Yeah, so we've been playing a lot of live shows lately, and when I first wrote this music, it was back in high school. I was just messing around with a pirated DAW that I got, you know, in my bedroom, and I only started performing live maybe 2 years ago, three years ago, and I kind of moved away from this type of sound because the energy is different when you're playing it live versus when you're recording it in your bedroom.
Yeah.
And so I've been writing a lot of music that is a little more fun to listen to live. And it's gone in a direction because I've got new members mm-hmm. in the band, and we've been rolling with their music taste as well. And they like it heavy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, compared to the stuff that I wrote,
for sure,
it's a lot heavier, and it's a little weird looking back and listening. We very rarely play this stuff live anymore, and you know, listening to it makes me realize maybe I should bring it back into my setlist. You know,
no, that's what I was gonna ask. Like, do you miss some of the lighter stuff now that you've been kind of mired in a little bit more heavier kind of, you know, driving rock stuff for shows? Like, do you find that you miss the more kind of mellow, almost lo-fi sound here?
Yeah, it definitely is easier on my voice.
Yeah. Not as much of the growling going on.
Yeah, yeah. I've been growling too much lately. yeah. No, I do miss playing it, especially this song and then the next song that is going to come up soon. It's mm-hmm. These are two of my favorites. These are two of the early songs I've ever written. And I wrote it with this one I wrote on my own, but the next song I wrote with a buddy of mine named Sam. Back when we were both just figuring music out, he's decided not to pursue music. He played the first couple shows with me. But yeah, it's very, very nostalgic, and yeah, I should bring it back onto mm-hmm. into my set for sure.
Now, when you talk about pursuing music, this is something that I feel like is always on my like list of questions that I never get time to end up asking my guests. What is kind of the goal of music for you? Like, is this more kind of like a fun hobby to do while you're, you know, at this point in your life, or is it something that you're, you know, trying to chase as a larger passion or career?
Yeah, I think personally the big goal is to get my music heard. I really just want people to, I mean, of course I enjoy making music, but I think the big goal is to have people also enjoy it. Mm-hmm. You know, you want to produce something of value,
yeah,
and have people enjoy that. Yes, and so in a way, I've been putting a lot of energy, especially this past year, into really pushing it forward, you know, get it rolling a little. And it's very difficult, very slow, mm-hmm. and I'm always anxious about how quickly I need to get things done, but I have a lot of time.
Yeah.
I have to slow down a little. Yeah.
No, I mean, and we talked about this before on the show, that it's like Vancouver's kind of a tough city when it comes to art, because there's so many super talented, super passionate people here, and not a lot of infrastructure there to support them. You know, we don't really have the same kind of like scene as the city like maybe Montreal or some places in the States that kind of have this like, you know, core like indie music or kind of whatever music scenes, because of just the cost of the city kind of you know, works its way into that a lot. So yeah, I think there's a lot of anxiety for people who really want music to kind of be something that they're, you know, putting out there, and not necessarily monetarily, but regardless, kind of reaping rewards from, you know, getting mm-hmm. being appreciated for what they're making, and, you know, having people like their stuff, you know, because that's at the end of the day, like, one of the main reasons to make art is to have other people enjoy something that you did, mm-hmm. You know, to create something of value that you like and that other people also like. And yeah, it can be tough to do that here for sure.
Yeah, it's only been getting harder. I remember when I first started playing live, we were we were like, we had no previous gigs. We've mm-hmm. never done anything live, and we were getting offered gig opportunities very, very quickly, yeah. and it was very nice. But as it's been going on, it's slowing down, and it's gotten to the point where some venues that we used to play at that used to be very open to having very, very small musicians, mm-hmm. they stopped booking small musicians because, wow. you know, you kind of have to hit
not
the
enough,
bottom line.
Yeah,
right?
Not enough return on investment on that.
Exactly, yeah.
Which is a shame because, you know, like, I think what it comes down to is there needs to be a willingness or at least a, like, survivability of operating at a loss.
Yeah.
To be able to, you know, allow some of these, you know, smaller musicians to start building an audience.
Yeah.
And then, like, you know, then they can actually start pulling the crowds in. And, you know, I think trying to make more spaces, or at least, you know, try to foster a culture of music based on discovery, you know, based on not just going to see the people that you know that are touring, but, you know, finding new people. And I think a lot of the shows I've been to in Vancouver, you know, the smaller shows, are great at bundling artists, you know, having, like, a number of small acts that are somewhat similar, some kind of different, but through that, you know, I've been introduced. Like, the show I saw of yours at Grey Lab, I was there for my buddy Matt, who's in the band Offscreen Death. He was opening for that show, and through that show, I met both one of our previous guests, Julian Lavoie, and Connor here from Sours. And I think that's great. I just think that there needs to be, you know, more of that, obviously, so that we can create enough of an audience for smaller artists in the city to be able to then, you know, allow for that to be profitable enough to justify to venues to book smaller artists. But mm-hmm. I think in general, with how everything gets more expensive, it becomes less justifiable to a lot of businesses to do that, which is a shame. So how do you find that you navigate it? Because at the end of the day, you know, you have at least two more shows coming up this summer. So yeah. How do you, like, navigate around these kind of challenges with the industry?
The big thing is just to ask a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I've been rejected, I don't know, maybe 95% of all, you know, I send a lot of emails every week, always trying to get gigs. The big thing to them is, do they think people will show up, right? Because that's their business. Mm-hmm. They need people to show up so they can make a return. And the best way to navigate it is to create a network with other artists, because if you're the only artist playing that night,
yeah.
they are not booking you. You need three or four other artists.
So you find that you approach other artists with, like, let's go try to book this gig together. It's not so much that the venue is organizing you?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So you reach out to the artists, you make sure they're free or whatever. And if you have a lineup set with a bunch of other artists, they're more likely to take you on, because it's like, okay,
mm-hmm.
There's four or five pretty, like, even if we're smaller artists,
yeah.
You know, some venues, they only really need like 80 people to be
yeah.
very profitable.
Yeah, if you have like three or four different acts playing, that's enough of them are going to have at least enough friends and family to make an 80-person crowd if there's like three or four bands
yeah.
that don't have too much overlap.
That's the hope, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think there's a lot of need for solidarity among artists in, you know, a kind of system like that.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of want to pivot back just to your music itself and talk a little bit about process here. Because we're talking about, yeah, like your approach to music kind of changing as you've been doing more live performance and, you know, working for a more kind of high energy sound. What is it like writing a song for Sours? How was it initially when it was, you know, a different kind of mix of people, and how has it changed with some of the new members?
Right. So with this EP that you're playing, these two songs, it used to just be that I would sit down in my room and I would play around with a bunch of different synths and drum loops until I found something that kind of sounded nice. But lately, it's everything that I write is just accident.
Mm.
Like, I'm just noodling around. I swear to God, 90 plus percent of whenever I'm playing the guitar, it's not music. It's just noise. I'm making a lot of noise. But then there's the small times where I'm like, okay, that sounds really cool. And then I'll record that into my phone. And I usually don't just have, like, one piece that I turn into a song. It usually is the culmination of 10 different instances or accidents that I blend together
mm-hmm.
Into one song. So it's just a collection of multiple really cool sounding accidents that just abruptly come up when I'm messing around. And then I bring it to the band. I'm like, this is what I got. And then we slowly develop it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've kind of been getting the workflow down. It's been slow. We've only really written 3 new songs in the last probably 8 months. But now that we have this flow, I think we're going to start writing quicker, faster. But it's very fun turning these little mistakes into really nice music.
So what's like the collaborative capacity? Like, what roles do your other band members play in kind of taking this from these little accidents into, you know, a fully produced song?
Yeah, I think they have a lot of strengths that I'm very weak in.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I really like vocal melodies and chords. So a lot of my writing has to do with that kind of just the singing part.
Yeah.
And but I'm not the greatest guitarist, right? I play very simple chords. So my guitarist, he always writes these beautiful guitar lines, and we'll sit down for hours and we'll just keep trying until we find something. And I'm not a drummer. And so of course I bring it to my drummer, and he's very open to what I have in my mind. I can't really describe it. It's like you go to the drummer and you're like, can I have a beat that goes like, and then he'll like do it, and then you're like, oh, actually I don't know if that works, could you try something else, maybe like I don't know, something like that. And then he'll do it, and it's you slowly work through it, because we kind of got it. He knows a lot more than I do, and I'm very simple minded with the drums, so it's he's taking what I think would work, and he's making it work, and it's pretty cool. Yeah,
I mean, I think it's when you have like a specialized band like that where everyone kind of has their thing, right? You know, and you get like, these very strong drummers, strong guitarists, strong, you know, vocalist and lyric writer, you kind of get this, collaborative workflow going. I always find it interesting, you know, how that differs from like you said, back when you were first writing some of these songs that we're listening to from Bittersweet Sit Down, I believe is the name of the EP. Mm, yeah. Where it was mostly just you kind of like mastering the whole thing. And the thing I usually kind of want from that is, do you feel that with the skill and, you know, strengths of your other bandmates, that your vision is coming out stronger than it would have alone? Or do you think that there's a certain degree of compromise that happens with the collaboration in, you know, creating something new, but not exactly, you know, how it's in your mind, or like when you're not the one kind of mastering everything?
Yeah, it was tough at first, for sure. There have been points of contention, especially among a couple of our songs, and there is a lot of compromise that you have to, you know, a lot of leeway, because you kind of need to fit their style and what they want to do. You know, this is the biggest thing. My guitarist, he's very good technically. He's very, very, he's a very good guitarist. And sometimes I write songs that are just too boring for him to play. And he'll come up to me and be like, this song is way too boring, I'm not playing it. It's like, yeah, no. And totally, like, I get it. I write very simple stuff sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, he at least deserves to play something fun
sure.
for him. I don't want him to get bored, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that is the kind of risky run of, like, when you have someone kind of spearheading the band who's, you know, like, your focus is, you know, the lyrics and the vocal performance. And if the song is kind of written exclusively towards that, you don't always have a groundwork laid for some of the more intense instrumentalists.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of navigate around that? How do you find, like, what makes a song able to kind of accommodate for those, like, the things that your other bandmates bring to it?
Yeah. I think a lot of it is, like, it is a lot of compromise. It's just being like, you know, they're part of the band as well. And it did start out as a solo project, but really it's, I don't think the music would be the same mm-hmm. without my members and, my guitarist, my bassist, my drummer. It would be very different. They add their own flavor to it, and they've added so much that I've learned to trust their, insight into the music as well.
Mm-hmm.
I used to be very closed off with my music and, you know, very perfectionist kind of, if it's not the way that I see it, it's not fit.
Yeah.
But as time has gone on, by being in a band, it's been, you know, these guys know, like, they've played with me for a year. and we've written music, and it's all so good. Like, I'm so proud of them. Yeah. And it's, no, I really trust their criticisms and stuff to, yeah. to the music. They add a lot of value.
No, that's awesome. It's good to have that sense of, like, community and synergy in, like, mm-hmm. a collaborative art space. Just pivot away a little bit again. I kind of want to talk about this notion of, like, an audience. And, again, we've talked about kind of difficulty finding, you know, your foothold in the Vancouver music scene. Do you feel that you have much of, like a following? Do you feel like there are certain people that kind of know you, know your music in a particular way? Or do you feel like you're still kind of trying to find your niche?
Yeah, I feel like if I were to answer it straight up, I don't think we have, like, just pure fans that mm-hmm. Come out to our show every time. We do have a lot of, like, amazing friends that yeah. support us. And, you know, I do see a lot of familiar faces at a lot of the shows. And, you know, but we're so small, I can't discern the line between yeah. them. Are they friends of friends, or are they actual fans?
Yeah.
The hope is to develop a fan base, I think, with any artist. But it's very difficult just to get that start, you know. Yeah. I think we're trying to find our place in the industry and our marketing. Like, why would people listen to us?
And, yeah.
You know, I never really thought of that before. Just this year, I was kind of just putting music out, not mm-hmm. thinking twice about it. But it's really thinking about, like, what makes you followable? Why would someone show up to your show, you know?
Yeah. And I think that is important. I think, you know, I think it is still infinitely valuable to have that, like, group of friends and friends of friends and that kind of community come to your show. Because, you know, like we're talking about with venues, to kind of justify booking someone, there needs to be people to come. Mm-hmm. And I think in general, that's kind of how crowds work. You know, when a crowd starts, there's got to be some people there. So other people are kind of like, oh, you know, if there's enough people here, maybe it's worth seeing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of having that, like, core starting group, I think, is important to hang on to. You know, a lot of the shows I end up seeing are people I know. And it's really exciting to, you know, be in that crowd and be like, I know that guy. And then, like, look around and be like, I only know, like, three or four other people here. Like, do they all know him? And then find out, like, no, these are just people who are here for a night out, and they're rocking this stuff. And now, you know, they've got new fans. So, yeah, I think a lot of it probably comes down to, you know, persistence. But I think, like you said, it's important to kind of look into, like, how do you brand yourself? How do you advertise the band, which, you know, is a totally different skill set than making good art, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Yeah, I've been thinking about, like, should I get a manager? Like, it's a lot of work.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, maybe that business minor can help.
hopefully, yeah. We'll see what it does.
All right. Well, we're heading towards the break here. We've got one more song from Connor here. I believe the title is Spinning. You want to tell us anything about this before we hop in?
Yeah, so this is another project that I worked on very close after Cheap Perfume with a buddy of mine. We've known each other for a while, and we used to make music together, and I miss making music with him. I was thinking of starting a band with him again, but no, this used to be his song. He made his own little track, and this was just my, I guess, cover of it. It's, yeah. I added a little things. It's a remake, and he's featured in the choruses and the bridge.
So, and what's his name?
Sam Simpson, yeah. All he's right. my homeboy.
Well, this is for Sam. This is Spinning, Connor's version. And after the break, we'll be right back with some more interview. Enjoy, friends.
Thank you. lost a lover, I lost all my friends.
Looking to get a reliable and affordable used bike? Need a repair or service to your current ride?
Come to the Bike Kitchen, UBC's full-service community bike shop, located in room 36 of the UBC Life building. Our hours are Monday to Friday, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m.
If you buy a bike from us, bring it back when you're done using it, and we'll give you half of your money back, as long as you took care of it. If it needs repairs, we'll split the cost with you.
Yep, you heard us right. We'll give you crisp dollar bills for half the original price of any used bike that you buy from us, minus the cost of repairs.
For more information about our buyback policy and to stay up to date on any COVID-19 inspired changes, find us online at thebikekitchen.com.
Hey Vancouver, looking for your summer plans? MRG Live has you covered. Catch Caroline Kingsbury, and Maris, Emotional Oranges, sometimes I love myself, touch myself, and many more live on stage. Don't miss out. Grab your tickets now at www.admit1.com and follow at MRG Live Official on Instagram for fresh announcements and the full lineup of upcoming shows.
Thank you. what the cards say. Four corners to any jail, like the one boxing up my mind. I've chewed on your empty words, and I hear your broken teeth grind. It don't sound so good. Gone are the days of the golden sun. Summer's ending early. The days are kinda lonely and the cameras are rolling with nothing new to show me. We see who has the power when they crush the last flower and the milk's gone sour. Now the hill is kinda tall and it makes us all feel small and we don't forget to grow. Longing for one more day when the sun wouldn't leave me alone. Now I'm waiting for the clouds to roll back. My head feels like a stone. It don't feel so good. Gone are the days of the golden sun. Summer's ending early. The days are kinda lonely and the cameras are rolling with nothing new to show me. We see who has the power when they crush the last flower and the milk's gone sour. Now the hill is kinda tall and it makes us all feel small and we all forget to crawl. Was another laugh, but when you want something you show a little wrath. Every day you drain a little more, licking the paintings on the wall. Close you are to when you'll crack. In a stretcher with a dying man, feeling like I'll kick the can. Gone are the days of the golden sun. Summer's ending early. The days are kinda lonely and the cameras are rolling with nothing new to show me. We see who has the power when they crush the last flower and the milk's gone sour. Now the hill is kinda tall and it makes us all feel small and we all forget to crawl.
Attention, attention. All artists, scene makers, writers, musicians, community organizers, activists, anarchists, proles, punks, and weirdos. Now is the time to make your voice heard at the 3rd annual Anarchist Book Fair. We want you in all of your resistance to colonialism. We want to platform your rage against the current political climate and join hands with you in saying enough. We're looking for folks who engage in community building, mutual aid, active resistance, skill building, and knowledge sharing to table booths and propose workshops on October 9th and 10th of 2025. This is an anarchist space, which means it opposes hierarchies and seeks to amplify unheard voices and build communities of mutual aid and support. First come, first serve. 50% of tables reserved for marginalized voices. You can email sponsorship@citr.ca to state your interest and be part of Anarchist Book Fair. sponsorship@citr.ca.
Just a few words before I go to sleep. I feel like I'm going to dream tonight. Big bad ones, you know? The kind you like.
There is a lot of music out there, but only some is strange enough for you. My name is B, and on SlimeWire, I do the work for you, picking out freaky tunes to rule your nighttime world. So check it out, every Wednesday at 10 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM.
And we are back. You were just listening to No Joy by The Beths, their latest single, in anticipation of a new album later this year, I believe. I wish I knew the name of that album right now, but it escapes me. You are listening to 101.9 FM CITR Community Radio. This is Amateur Hour. Thank you for joining us. On Amateur Hour, we sit down with local amateur and student musicians to talk about the music they make and the music they love. Before the break, we were talking to Connor Joy here about the music he makes. He's from the band Sours. Listen to a couple of those fantastic tunes. And now we're moving to the second part of the show, where Connor has brought in an artist that he loves but feels not too many people know about. And this artist goes by the name of Megs. What can you tell us about Megs?
I actually don't know too much about his personal life, but I've listened to his music since I was in high school. I started listening to one song. I think it blew up. I think it's his most popular song. It's called Drugs, and it's I covered it a lot when I first started gigging, and it was one of my favorites. I couldn't sing it, though, because he goes into three different octaves, and it's very difficult to sing. But I fell in love with this song, and then, you know, there's a lot of artists where you listen to one song, and you don't really think much about the artist. You just have their song in your playlist. Mm-hmm. But there's something about him, his album art, and I loved the song so much that I checked out his the rest of his music, and I think I listened to every single one of his tracks, and I just fell in love with his style. He's like a solo artist, but he plays live with a band, so mm-hmm. all the stuff he writes is straight from his noggin, and I thought it was really cool, especially when I was early stages of writing. His music was very influential. Yeah.
Alrighty. Well, we're going to listen to Drugs, followed by, what's the other song you have for us today?
Lightheaded.
Lightheaded. These are Drugs and then Lightheaded by Megs. Please enjoy.
Sure.
And we are back. You just heard Lightheaded by Megs. This is Amateur Hour on 101.9 FM CITR Community Radio. My name is Ewan. I am in the studio today with Connor Joy from the band Sours. Connor has brought a couple of songs here today from Megs, Drugs and Lightheaded, for us to talk about. So tell us a little bit more. How did you discover this artist?
I discovered them through the Spotify algorithm.
Yeah. It's funny how that works.
A lot of my the music that I listen to has come from the Spotify algorithm or like word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And Megs is, yeah, I learned through them through the almighty algorithm. I was blessed with their music, but I've definitely been like spewing his name to all my friends, everyone who will listen.
A true evangelist, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that's streaming is such a like double-edged blade. Because like on the one hand, it's a lot worse for, you know, making money as an artist. You know, you mm-hmm. get like a crisp $17 every year, which is like at this yeah. point like what, a sandwich and a half at Subway. Yeah, so like, you know, it's not great on that point, but at the same time, the way it kind of fashions people's listening habits, I think makes it easier to discover artists like Megs. Mm-hmm. And even smaller. I mean, like, you know, half of the artists I play in those kind of musical ad breaks on the show are people I've discovered through those algorithms. And there's a few other avenues that they get to as well. But, you know, it's good that if you manage to break your algorithm enough, you can start getting artists that are like under 100,000 monthly listeners. Mm-hmm. I love occasionally Spotify will just throw a song into like, I'll like listen to an album and then it'll end and they'll just give me a song by someone with like 80 monthly listeners. And I'll be like, oh, awesome.
Yeah. It's
this is
awesome.
Sick. So, you know, I do kind of love it for that. It's tough when at the same time it's so much worse for creators monetarily.
Yeah. I think, the way I understand it is it used to be extremely difficult to break through as a creator. Mm-hmm. You were kind of, there was a wall that was in front of you, and that wall was record labels and yeah. very important people. And if you couldn't get liked by them or benefit them, you'd never break through. But now all you need to do is market yourself well and mm-hmm. break through the algorithm. And I mean, that's all you have to do. It's still very difficult.
Yeah.
But at least it has nothing to do with whether someone likes you or not.
I have a fun thing that I learned this morning that I don't even know if you know, because I was looking through your Spotify page, and Spotify will actually show you where your listener bases are from, if you look mm-hmm. at it.
Yeah.
And I believe Sours has something around, I can't remember exactly how many monthly listeners, but
I can pull it up.
Yeah, we can pull this up right now, live data gathering. But I believe four of them are from Lisbon, Portugal.
Oh yeah, we have a couple Portuguese
yeah,
fans.
Yeah, you have some Portuguese listeners, which is
which blows my mind.
Yeah, it's crazy, right? Because it's like, you know, right, like you were saying, you know, before like going through all these record labels and stuff, like, you know, that's how you get this international distribution. You know, if you're yeah. a local act playing underground scenes, you're not going to be heard in Portugal.
Yeah.
Like you're locked to your city. But now it's such a different world in terms of, you know, making music and finding music.
Yeah, you know what I think it is? I think it's one person from Portugal who accidentally stumbled upon our music.
And then shared it with three friends. Yeah,
shared it with
and
homies.
Now they're all the biggest Sours fans possible. And yeah. when this new album hits that's nothing like it, they're going to be so disappointed.
For the past year, I've seen Portugal as one of the top countries.
That's
so these guys are always...
Yeah, they love it.
Always playing every month. And well, same with Mexico. There's four people in Mexico that are vibing with
But I mean, like, you think about it, like, I, you know, I think a lot of people have the same thing. I feel like a lot of people have these little artists where it's like, no one else is listening to this but, like, me and the few people I've told about it.
Yeah.
And that's kind of awesome. I think that's, there's something really sweet about that. In a way, it's kind of hard to place my finger on. You know, in a lot of ways, the artists I listen to, I want them to be more well-known. You know, I want them to get out there because I feel a lot of people will enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of them are just weird as hell and specifically for me. But a lot of them, I think, are things that people would really like if only they knew, and that's the kind of stuff I try to play on air. I think that streaming does help that in some way. I just wish there was some in between.
Yeah.
Oh, and I think, you know, there's not enough of a culture anymore of buying albums.
Oh, for sure.
And really the main revenue a lot of artists get is through concerts and through
yeah.
merchandise, which is really tough if you're a small local artist.
Yeah, exactly.
which is to say, everyone listening to this show, get a Bandcamp account and start buying albums.
Yeah, actually. No, it is difficult to make money as an artist. Especially, like, could you imagine if the music you make can't even be performed live for whatever reason? It'd be super difficult because it's kind of in a, if you have it all on digital, it's in a medium where it's very, very hard to make a steady income from if you're not like top, you know, 100. But it's most of the revenue does come from live shows for sure. And things like album sales and merch, honestly, musicians at this point are just glorified t-shirt salesmen.
No, it's nuts that, like, you know, buying music just isn't really a thing for most people anymore. You know, some of us still do it. Some of us, you know, people who are into, like, vinyl collecting and stuff. But at that point, you're not really buying a vinyl of, you know, Sours. You're buying, like, Led Zeppelin 4 again. Like, you know, they don't need your money. they're doing fine.
Exactly,
But, like, that's the stuff you know, you want the physical editions of, because, you know, it's stuff that was initially pressed on vinyl, not just digital stuff being, you know, repressed. Which can be fun to have the novelty of too. But, you know, with the loss of physicality of albums and then eventually into streaming, it's just weird that, like you say, t-shirts generate more profit than albums.
It's sad because you know, albums are so cool, and I have to, the fact that I have to think and contemplate whether or not I should get an album pressed for my next album is it's a huge investment, right? And it's a lot of artists, they already don't have a lot of money because they've, for whatever reason, you know, we don't really make that much. So to put down a huge investment like that, it can honestly hurt the artist so hard, you know? And it's become something that artists are choosing not to do now because the investment is so risky. Whereas t-shirts, it's a lot cheaper and easier. So you'll see a lot more merch sales, a lot less album sales for smaller artists.
Well, CITR did this thing, and I don't know if they still do it, but there's a couple things out there in the lobby. You can see them there, those vinyls. Sorry for bringing the visuals into the audio medium, listeners. But CITR had this series of records called Pop Alliance, which were compilations of local artists. And yeah, they would be pressed onto vinyl, and I mean, I was given one when I did my tour here. I don't know if they were being sold for fundraiser or what the situation was there. But I feel like things like that, where it's, you know, more of a collective kind of endeavor, could be a way to, you know, get people buying music again in a certain way.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, it's, yeah, you got to navigate around these difficulties. Anyways, we're getting up close to the hour, and we haven't even, we've barely talked about Megs. These are great songs. I really like what I listened to. I didn't get too much of a chance to listen to them earlier today because I woke up late and I was just organizing all kinds of stuff this morning.
It is a Monday after all.
Oh my God, jeez.
It's our weekend.
Yeah, it's our weekend until I have a 6-day work week this week. I had to pick up someone's shift. Alas. Do you have any final thoughts on Megs before we close out the show?
Go listen to them. They're amazing.
If people liked what they heard, what where do you go next? What albums, etc.?
Oh, the album that these two songs came off of, I don't know the album name. I can find it, but it's, this one is I think it's an EP, and it's fantastic. And then they released a newer album, I believe. Oh no, this is an album. This is the self-titled Megs album.
Perfect.
It's very
easy
good
to remember.
Very good, yeah. And then their a newer album that they released called "Say Things That Matter." That one was also very good.
And just to make that easy for people to find, that is M A G S, all caps with periods between each letter, like it's an acronym. But I believe it's just his last name.
I have no idea.
Great stuff all around. Thank you for sharing that. Connor, it has been and forgive the pun, a joy to have you on today on Amateur Hour. You have a couple shows coming up, if you want to plug those real quick.
So we have a show at the Cobalt on August 8th. If you're free that day, it is a Friday, so
clear your Friday, make it happen.
August 8th, come see us live. We will be playing a lot of our newer songs. If you want to hear some freshly written indie rock. Yeah. Come support us. We also have another show September 4th at Redgate, if you like Redgate. They amazing venue. Love
actually
playing
still
there.
Haven't. I, every time I've been invited to a show at Redgate, something else has happened. So maybe that'll be my inaugural Redgate experience. That'd be great. Keep an eye out on Sours. They've got some new music coming and a couple of shows. This has been Amateur Hour. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll be back in a couple weeks with an unconfirmed guest as of yet. I can't say their name because they haven't fully agreed to be on the show, but that'll be happening. And then we have one more show after that for the summer season with local band The Vetoes, which should be lots of good fun. Listen to Sours. We've got one more song for you guys here. Coming up is one of the new singles from Shadow Academy, a band that I believe I played on the air before. I'm a big fan of. So this is Icarus coming up off of Shadow Academy's single, soon to be the album Prisms, I believe, next month. So keep an ear out for that. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and have a wonderful couple of weeks. Goodbye.
to wear.